It's like that, y'all. It's like that, y'all. It's like that. For the money, 2 for a pussy and foreign calls, 3 for Alizé, niggas deceased the behind bars. I rap the vanguard, check the prognosis, is it real or showbiz? My window faces, shootouts, drug overdoses, live amongst the roses, only the drama. For real, a nickel plate is my fate, my medicine is the ganja. Here's my basis, my razor embraces many faces. Your telephone blown, black stitches, infatuations, people's a petrol, dramatic.
In years past, right around this time, it's always around this time, right before the new year, that we just kind of bash the WWE. And we're saying, like, oh, man, like, there's no hope, and it's the old guard. You kind of do the same stuff. I thought we had a very productive conversation. And so what I kind of want to do now, and I'm going to put you on the spot. So let's start, talk about some overarching wrestling fanism that we have. I want to know, like, the first, now, I know you have a bad memory, And I don't want you looking up at my ceiling. I mean, you know how many cobwebs I have by looking at my ceiling when I make you actually think there's something off the cuff. But whether it was the first wrestler that you saw in a match, but who was the first wrestler that you marked out for when you first started watching wrestling back in 1985, 1987?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I can't say, like, there was one guy, right?
So can I say who's the first wrestler that I ever saw?
Let me throw a group of people out here.
Okay, can I say mine?
Why'd you ask me? And then you say you want to go first.
No, go ahead. No,
let me throw one name that's probably in that group, and then I'll...
No, he's definitely not in that group, but go ahead.
I'm pretty sure Coco Beware was one of the first guys that I probably marked out for.
Yeah.
Just like he was pretty unique. He was, you know, I'm not that tall. He was like the smaller guy.
Had the Ghostbuster,
which was a sick move. Had the bird. I can't say like definitely that Coco Beware was the first guy I ever marked out for, but like,
yeah, pretty close. He had those glasses too.
His style was pretty good for
his
for
disposition. Look at his disposition.
Yeah. But I'm thinking Coco Beware was.
You don't see what I see. Yeah, you're the one wearing glasses.
Coco was probably one of the early guys that
Coco.
I identified with.
Yeah, you too. So that's kind
of,
yeah.
Well, like, you know, he was the smaller guy. He was a little bit of a, like, athlete. He was pretty athletic compared to the wrestlers at the time.
Yeah, Coco was tight, dude.
And he was kind of a high flyer for that time.
So. Yeah, had those crazy glasses going back when those wraparound glasses were good. I remember the first real wrestler where I saw like the whole match. Okay, I remember watching the match. It was like Saturday Superstars or whatever. Even before there were Saturday Superstars, right? It was in the morning. The first wrestler that I ever watched and like kind of, I wouldn't say I rooted for him, but I was like, I kind of wanted him to win because he was fun to watch. And it was the first, granted, this is the first match I saw. I don't know who he was facing, but the first like full wrestling match that I saw from start to finish was Leaping Lanny Poffo. It was like, and this is when he was Leaping Lanny Poffo, and he was it was like probably the first match, and it was against a nobody, but he actually won. He won off of like, I think, like a high cross body or something like that off the top rope, and that's why they call him Leaping Lanny Poffo. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then but I think like the first kind of, probably like the first guy that I really marked out for, and I hate to say it, but it was probably, and because I knew all the names, right? Like, I knew all the names of the wrestlers. And
Steamboat?
It wasn't Steamboat. It was probably Brutus the Barber Beefcake. That was probably, like, the first guy I ever really, like, marked out for. Just because, and I remember talking, like, man, this guy should be the Intercontinental Champion. Why does he always lose to a Honky Tonk Man and Dino Bravo or whatever it was? But that was probably the first guy I really marked out for.
So, I feel like when I first started watching wrestling, Beefcake was more of a tag team guy, so I don't know if I really... I always liked Beefcake, but I don't know if I was super marked out for him because I'm thinking he was tagging with Valentine at the time, and kind of the same thing. I really liked the Hart Foundation, so I can't say I just, like, marked out for Bret Hart, but I just liked the Hart Foundation as a team.
They're very easy to mark out for. I mean, Brett that time. I mean, and I like the Hart Foundation too. I was a big Matt Hart fan though. Yeah. Right? And I think you gravitated more towards Brett, but
I think I like both of them. But I would say Steamboat's got to be right up there too, because then that's the other kind of identifier, right? Like, he's the only Asian dude out there. He had the really cool name. Really, really good technical wrestler. I mean,
he was always talking about his unit all the time.
His family
unit. His family unit, yeah.
Yeah. He had the Komodo Dragon when he was going against Randy Savage, which was also, like pretty cool to see him break out the Komodo Dragon for that. So, I know, like, those are a couple of the, like, earlier guys. I can't say who was the first guy that ever, like, got me excited to watch wrestling, but, you know, I'm thinking it was, like, Ricky Steamboat and Coco Beware. Hart Foundation, I was a big fan of. I liked the British Bulldogs at the time.
British Bulldogs, yeah. And that was like my other group too. So after Leaping Land and Poffo, it was the same TV show. So Leaping Land and Poffo was. I'm not saying I marked out for Leaping Landing, but that was the first guy I remembered. And then, but the main event was, or the end match was the British Bulldogs, and that to me was I'd never seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. And that was, it was a good introduction to wrestling because I was like, man. And the British Bulldogs lost. Yeah. And I think they lost to, like, a Mouth of the South team. I don't know who it was, but they lost to that team, and I'm going...
Got hit with the mega... With the
I don't know. I don't know what happened, dude. I don't know what happened. It was like a Saturday... It was a Saturday morning thing, and it was just that there was a...
It was dangerous Danny Davis involved.
It was a travesty of justice or...
A miscarriage.
A miscarriage of justice. But that was a good introduction. And then I'd probably have to say, like, the other guy, one of the guys I really marked out for... was Don the Rock Morocco.
Yeah.
I really liked Morocco. I just liked he came out to that symphony entrance with superstar Billy Graham, and just that was another guy that I was like, oh, you know, like, yeah, you're like, oh, this guy always loses. How come he doesn't win? And then and I think after that, then of course once you start getting into Macho Man and Macho Man's face run, that sealed the deal for me. I mean, Macho Man was like the guy that made me continue to, like, he made me a wrestling fan for life, you know, just, you know, and it's kind of funny, like, at that time, I didn't know that I liked him that much, I didn't know I was a mark for him, but it was funny, like, Jericho was doing a podcast with Conan, and, you know, Conan was just kind of, you know, he watched a lot of Florida wrestling with Dusty Rhodes, and then he was talking about how he saw a WWE show. And he saw Hulk Hogan, and then he saw Macho Man too. And he's like, and I don't know about you, Zal, but Hulk Hogan's just kind of like this JoJo, like, you know, JoJo weak sauce or something like that. He's all, because I was looking, it's like Macho Man is like the guy. So it's funny, you know, because I think everybody, at least us growing up during that time, we all liked Hulk Hogan. It was like a prerequisite, you know, like when, like, God was handing out, like, you know, your brain and stuff. Like, Hulk Hogan was like, you know. He had a little pamphlet that he handed out about Hulk Hogan, and everybody loved Hulk Hogan. But the good thing about us is that, like, after, like, probably, like, 6 or 7 months of liking Hogan, and we started watching Macho Man, I think both of us became huge Macho Man guys. Even though I think we kind of rooted for Hulk Hogan to beat him in WrestleMania V, that was, like, WrestleMania V was, like, that's when I started realizing, like, wait a minute, I'm like, Macho Man did all the flipping work, and Hulk Hogan is riding on his coattails just like he said he was, you know?
All right, so... To turn this conversation around, then, as a young Mark, who's the first wrestler that you hated?
First wrestler I hated. Well, I liked Rick Rude. You know who the first wrestler who I hated, really? And yeah, no, this is like, it's in the bag, dude, because you liked this guy, and I flipping hated him. I could not stand two guys. I could not stand. Number one was Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I hated Duggan. Duggan was just a flipping idiot, you know, and
for the record, No, not you.
No. Yeah, no. But number two was Ultimate War. I could not stand the Ultimate War. Yeah. And I think it was because, you know, it's because of Rick Rude. I liked Rick Rude. It was funny, like, the producer, my brother, he liked Rick Rude because Rick Rude was funny to him, because Rick Rude would, like, shake his hips and do all this stuff, and my brother would just, I'm watching wrestling, you just hear my brother in the background just, like, laughing his ass off, right? And then I'm going, like, you know, and so the whole thing was, like, when I was watching wrestling, my sisters would give me a bad time, my stepmom would give me a bad time, like, why are you watching this thing for? Well, if I had my brother, like, laughing at it, like, my brother was the key, right? If my brother was watching it, and I'm like, oh, you know, me and, you know, like, my stepmom would get all pissed off, I'm like, well, you know, my brother's, you know, the apple of your eyes watching it. And so I'd always like, hey Jason, I'm like, hey, Rick Rude's on. And so, you know, he'd be playing Batman and stuff or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and he'd kind of like, oh, I don't want to watch it. I'm like, no, come on, dude. I like force him to watch it. And so he'd start watching Rick Rude and just start laughing, right? And then when Rick Rude got in the feud with Ultimate Warrior, it really exposed how bad Ultimate Warrior was in terms of not only in the ring, but in just in terms of like promos. And then I think I'm always a heel by nature, you know, and I'm never a person. Like, you know, like Nas said way back when, like, I was the guy rooting for the bad guy in the movie. Well, I'm not a guy when everybody, like, just blindly likes someone and he acts stupid and does, like, he panders to the crowd, which Ultimate Warrior did. I step back from that guy and go, like, well, wait a minute. And I try to judge him. And I realized then that I didn't like the Ultimate Warrior because I liked Rick Rude so much because he was cutting great promos. He was way better in the ring. And so that was the first guy I hated was Ultimate Warrior with all my heart. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan's a close second.
This is going to be blasphemous to quote Stephen A. Smith, but I think the first guy I hated was Harley Race. And
the King Harley Race in WWE?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause,
WWF.
Because by the time I saw Harley Race...
Pantera too, right?
Well, I didn't hate him. I just thought he was a joke.
Yeah.
But Harley Race was... And it's not fair because...
It's not blasphemous.
I saw... Well...
He sucked in WWE.
It's like Harley Race...
And Adrian Adonis was up there too, right?
Yeah, I hated Adrian Adonis. Yeah. I never liked Piper.
Yeah,
but Harley Race, in wrestling terms, was Larry Bird for me in terms of the NBA. Like by the time I started watching them, they were kind of broken down shells of what they once were. But the broadcast just gotted them up at every opportunity they got, and I'm sitting there and saying, "Hey, how is this fat old white dude like the baddest guy on the planet, and he can't even move?" And so it you know, and this is the mark in me, like watching him saying, "No, this guy's terrible." You know, I never got to see Harley Race in his prime. And so I hate to try to say, like, you know, now I'm knowing a little bit more about, you know, the career that the guy had, to say I thought this guy sucked, but like that was the first guy that I was sitting there wrestling saying, "Dude, this guy's terrible."
Well, even the match that they say, like, you know, where you can watch the match and see, kind of see him like in his big match with Flair. He was old by that time too. When it was Flair for the Gold in 83 or 82.
See, I didn't even see that. I saw it like.
Well, yeah, you saw like a long 5 time years later. Yeah, and you're going like, and I remember even telling me, he's like, "Man, that match is brutal, dude." I'm like, "Well, I'm like, if you look at it for what the time was, it's actually like a really good match." I mean, they're doing stuff that, you know, I mean, a guy as big as Harley Race was doing, he's doing high cross bodies off the rope or flares and stuff. So it was actually a good match, but Race was already already. He was already worn down by that point. I mean, he was passing that torch, right?
And that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I don't want to take away anything, you know, but by the time, you know, as a person not understanding exactly who was who, by the time I first was exposed to Harley Race was way past his prime. And then just sitting there, listening to these guys just talk about how this is like the toughest guy there was and one of the greatest of all time. I'm like, this guy can barely walk. Like, how is this guy like the all-time best, dude? I don't understand it.
Look at the way he dances.
And you know the other guy that I don't know why it sticks out, but like I really remember like thinking Akeem the African Dream sucked. And as much as I like the Slickster, and the Slickster kind of made the whole thing work, but like I just remember watching Akeem saying, "What the hell is this fat white dude trying to do? Like acting like he's from Africa, dude.
Hey, he can move, dude. He can move."
Oh yeah. I would have really liked to see a lot more of him as the one-man gang, but I just remember seeing him, because he was, you know, he was pretty athletic for his size and stuff like that, and like, you know, later on, you know, kind of looking back, I'm like, you know, this guy was like a pretty decent worker, but I just remember at the time watching him and thinking, dude, this guy's awesome.
Oh, for his size, I mean, at that time, he was a good moving big man.
It was just his character, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching him and thinking, dude, this is a joke. And yeah, Adrian Adonis, that's a good pull. Like he was really easy to just.
Yeah,
like,
you hated that guy.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, like, the guy used to be in shape. You know, I mean, the guy actually, right. You know, and then we saw him at his tail end of his career, and it's kind of like the same thing. I'm sitting going like, dude, what's the? I mean, see, we didn't even know what he was back then, right? We're like, why is this guy coming out with flipping makeup on? You're like you're a man, dude.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
what's the appeal?
Be a man. You know, and he's like fat and stuff and everything. And okay, so let's see. What about like late '80s? So you kind of. Late 80s, we're still watching, so probably, and like in the early 90s, you stopped watching entirely.
Yeah, I stopped until like 96.
So who, This might be too easy, but who brought you back in to wrestling during that time?
NWO is what brought me back in. So it was Hogan coming back as a heel was what made me come back. And then, so I had missed like the whole like earlier runs with.
Well, but you saw the like when you were in college, you saw the match. You saw like Hall versus You saw Nash versus HBK.
Right? No.
Yeah, yeah.
I missed the whole.
You told me when it was like Pamela Anderson, remember? Like, or was that you, or was it someone else?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I missed the whole HBK run. Like, I missed the whole like Kevin Nash's Diesel and Oz and all that stuff. So like. I just remember you called me up and you told me like that Hogan had come back and turned heel, and then I think I pshawed you, and like you told me no, you need to take a look at this, and then I started watching with Hogan and Hall and Nash, and that's what got me back in all the way in. So it was those guys that got me watching again, just the whole NWO.
Dude, wasn't that like a great time though in wrestling?
Yeah.
I mean, when NWO first started, and then. The Nintendo 64 came out with that wrestling game, and it's like the first game that had NWO. And I remember, like, I would go over a friend's house during college and stuff, and like, I went to his apartment, and like, his friend like had an NWO, big old NWO flag in his room and stuff. And just like, man, I'm like, this is such a great time to watch wrestling.
Right. It was like the first time that you could openly be a wrestling fan, and like, if people like tried to mock you about it, like, you didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And that was what good. And then like, very soon after that. Was when The Rock came into prominence.
See, so like NWO was what started that, but it wasn't until like when I started realizing wrestling was becoming mainstream was because of what The Rock and Austin were doing. So before we get into all that, like what wrestler did you mark out during that time when you first came back in wrestling? What was the wrestler that you marked out for?
I marked out for Hogan, marked out pretty good for Nash. Hall quite a bit. Pretty soon after that, I started liking Jericho a lot. I liked Eddie Guerrero a lot. Same mostly those guys. And then just all the old, any of the old school guys that started coming over. When Kurt Hennig came over. When Mr. Rude came over.
Yeah. And he never wrestled, but yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby. Hi, Mr. Rude.
Scott Steiner. Like, I like Scott Steiner. I like Bagwell. I liked all those guys. I liked Flash Norton. Pretty much anyway. I even marked out once for Brian Adams.
For Disco Inferno?
No, never for Disco Inferno.
You pencil neck geek.
No, the NWO would like to invite all of you to have a nice warm glass of shut the hell up.
And you're saying up and down.
I was like, yeah.
That's my boy. Crush.
Kona Crush.
So like during that time, there's a lot to kind of make up for. So like during like the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, I'm trying to think like who I really like followed. I think the guy that kind of kept me in, of course, was Macho Man, but what did it for me was really Ric Flair and the Horsemen, and what the person that I really gravitated toward, and I didn't even know at the time that I was, because I always liked Flair, and then the only reason for me to watch after that was anything that was Horsemen related, because I probably had like 2 years where I wasn't watching anything, because I was working a lot. I think I was like 16 and I was working like 40 hours a week. And, you know, you hear 16-year-olds now working 40 hours a week. It's unheard of, right? It's illegal, but I found a way to make it work. It was illegal back then, too. But I remember Paul Roma joined the Horsemen. And I was like, oh, I'm like, the Horsemen are back. And it's like Paul Roma. Like I like Paul Roma as the Young Stallions. Like,
no, you're a Jimmy Powers fan.
I liked him with Power and Glory. And it's kind of, yeah. It's funny, like, you know, I'm talking about Leaping Lanny Poffo. I'm talking about Brutus the Barber Beefcake. It's like, well, those two guys sucked. And then Paul Roma sucked too. But there was something about, I like Paul Roma. I didn't realize how small the guy was. But
Paul Centopani?
Yeah, whatever, dude. He wishes he could be me. but once I learned that he joined the Horsemen, then I started watching NWA or WCW. And then, so Paul Roma brought me back in, but then, you know, Tully Blanchard was kind of there at the end, but he left. So it really started becoming in terms of Arn Anderson was always a good watch. P.S. Michael Hayes with the Freebirds. I remember they were hot for a while in NWA. And then Doom. I mean, I really like Doom with Woman and Butch Reed and Ron Simmons. And then...
You're a big Dogface Gremlin fan at that time,
I was too. A Dogface Gremlin fan, too. I thought he was really good. Yeah, and, it's funny. It's like, that guy was, first of all, a great wrestler. And then he had a ton of charisma. And the thing that sucked, the worst thing that happened to him was Scott Steiner. I mean, when I first saw Scott, and I think I even told you about this, too, I was trying to explain to you what the Frankensteiner was. Like, and I couldn't explain it, because I remember telling you, I was like, yeah, man, like, Rick Steiner has his brother Scott Steiner, and he does this move, it's called the Frankensteiner, and what he does is and I remember telling you, you just kind of looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about? I was like, if you ever try to explain what the Frankensteiner is, so basically what he does is he gets both of his legs, he puts them on the shoulder, he wraps them around, he puts his legs on top of your shoulder, and he's upside down, and he has his legs are wrapped around the guy's neck, and he flips them over, and you're like, what? And I'm like, here, let me show you.
No.
But so there was that, and then I think during kind of like before the NWO came around, when WWF was kind of didn't have a lot of people, had a lot of bad gimmicks and stuff. This is when you're talking about like Phantasmo and Max Moon, who's Conan, by the way. The Goon and all this stuff. The guy that I really started watching and I saw a match with him, it's just kind of like out of the blue. Same thing with like Leaping Lana Poffo, right? I turned on wrestling one time and it was Chris Benoit. And I saw Chris Benoit wrestle. I was like, man, they're like, this guy has something. Like, he's small as all hell. I said, but this guy is just, I mean, he's like, it was perfect. They call him like the Rabid Wolverine, and like he wrestled like a flipping Rabid Wolverine. And the guy was just awesome. And they said, like, oh, here's the Fourth Horseman. And I was like, oh, there we go. Like, here's the Fourth Horseman. I'm like, I'm all in already, right?
And another, in that time, maybe like slightly after that, Harlem Heat.
Yeah.
Harlem Heat as a tag team.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great tag
team. Everybody,
yeah.
But, and when they had... Against SST?
Yep. And when they had Sensational Sherry or like Jackie, I thought it was a really good manager for them. But yeah, Harlem Heat was really good. Like, you could really see there was something in Booker. And that was a great team.
Tag team wrestling, I mean, it was... a weaker form of tag team wrestling at that time, but during that time it was like Sting, Lex Luger, and Sting was hot, and Sting was actually, this was when Sting was actually good. Like, you never, it's kind of like, you came in on Sting, same type of thing, right? He busted his knee open and stuff, and so you saw Sting a lot later in life, kind of like, it's your Larry Bird analogy, right? It's like, Sting is like your Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? Same thing, right? Everybody loves Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but it's like, dude, like, when we saw him in the 80s, like, this guy sucks. He can't move up and down the field or court and stuff. And
the difference that I will always maintain with Sting is, I think Sting had probably the shortest peak of any guy that's supposed to be like an all timer,
yeah.
Right? Most like a guy like Harley Race, like that guy put in work for 15 years, and then I saw him in the last like 5 years of a 25 year career. But like, I know that in like the 70s, that guy was doing work. Sting, you know, he was hot for like maybe 2-3 years tops.
Not even that, maybe like a year and a half. And even then, it wasn't his fault. He also got booked bad too.
But he just like, well, his physical ability just dropped off the face of the earth real quick. So I remember when I first saw him and like the blonde haired Sting, and when he would do that Stinger splash in the corner, dude, that guy was getting mad elevation.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, dude, the guy was like, dude, he just like, it was like a 2 foot jump with like
vertical.
6 inch elevation. Yeah. It's like, dude, that's the weakest corner splash in the business going today. Lex Luger, I always thought was awful.
Lex Luger, I liked for maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, and then when I started seeing the old stuff with the Four Horsemen, then I was like, oh yeah, it's Four Horsemen all the way. But there was like maybe like a New York minute where Lex Luger was hot as all hell, and then, you know. And then he's Lex Luger. So recently, like, so it's funny. Like, when I was watching, late '80s, '90s until, hey, check this out.
Yeah,
let me fix that real fast. But I just need my intro. You know, I need the music. What was I saying? No, so it's funny. Like when I was watching during that time. So, like, in the early, the late 90s, early 2000s, I didn't watch wrestling at all. So, during that time, who was the person that allowed you to keep on watching, and who'd you, like, kind of mark out for during that time?
Which time now?
late 90s, early 2000s.
Well, I was pretty invested at that point in time, so it wasn't like
not so much 2000. No. Maybe like 2005, 2006. Cause that's when I stopped watching.
So I was liking Randy Orton at that time. I still like Batista, but like Edge was one guy that really kept me in it. Jericho was like kept me watching. Was Rock gone by then?
He would show up every now and then.
So he was on the part time thing. Yeah. So there was a down, like once The Rock left, there was a time where I kind of like peeled off. But I'd say that Jericho, Edge and Christian, Benoit, Dudley Boys, like that whole that whole series of the TLC matches, and then seeing Edge go off on a good solo run, and Christian going off on a good solo run, and Jericho having an opportunity to be the guy for a while. Those were the guys that really were keeping me in it. But really, that was the second time when I stopped watching wrestling, and a lot of it had to do with John Cena. Rock left, Brock left, and then that was the beginning of like the force feeding of John Cena, which made me kind of just peel off. Kurt Angle, Kurt Angle was great at that time. Eddie Guerrero was still like doing his thing at the time. I don't know my timelines very well, but I'm pretty sure those were still the guys that were keeping me going.
So real fast. So when John Cena had his early run, what brought you back into wrestling? Who brought you back into wrestling?
I don't know.
Because I know.
Well, yours was CM Punk.
Well, no, not even that. It was when The Rock came back after that long time. He came back on that run when he hosted WrestleMania or whatever it was, and he mm-hmm. showed up and cut that great promo and put everybody in their place. Back when they had like the anonymous GM and Michael Cole was talking way too much. But the wrestler that actually got me back into wrestling was Randy Orton, because I really liked Orton, and Orton was doing stuff that...
Was that when they did Evolution around then?
It was right after Evolution. So I watched a little bit of Evolution, I liked it, but then once Evolution broke off, I stopped watching, and I really didn't watch. What did it for me, I was watching a little bit, what did it for me was when they kicked Hall off, you know, when they released Hall, I said, forget it, I'm not going to watch anymore, because mm-hmm. Hall was the only reason why I was watching. But when Randy Orton came back and he had those series of matches with John Cena, mm-hmm. and then he went to SmackDown or whatever, that's when I started watching again. And then CM Punk, of course.
Yeah.
So, since you came back so fast after I said that, it's like, I think like it's like, what, the 20th anniversary? Well, a couple things. It's the 35th anniversary of The Horseman this past month. And then I think it's like the 20th anniversary of Eddie Guerrero's death. So I've been listening to a lot of 10 years, I think. Maybe. 10 years, maybe, yeah. 10 years of Eddie Guerrero's death. So, real fast, your final say on the Four Horsemen, because, I mean, my everybody knows how steeped I am in Four Horsemen. What's your final take on the Four Horsemen in 35 years?
Yeah, I think they pretty much were the standard bearer for what a faction was supposed to be. I think they wrote the book on like heel tactics and distraction, cutting good promos, and were really kind of like the forerunners to like, you know, instead of wrestling being, you know, a bunch of like sweaty hillbillies in tights, like guys that were kind of trying to act like they were professional athletes. So I think there's a lot of like legacy that they set up being who they were. I didn't get to see in their prime either, but I've kind of gone back and seen enough like YouTube clips and old stuff from like videos or like the network to see like some great promos that they had.
Now, going back and stuff, because I'm the biggest mark for the Four Horsemen. I mean, that's well stated, and you know, like my markism for the Four Horsemen. Do you like him as much as I do, or is it like just like a kind of more of you think it's because you didn't see him, that's why you don't like him as much as I do, or is it more kind of they just weren't your guys? Because if you had to choose between the Horsemen and the NWO, you'd pick the NWO.
Because I saw the NWO as it was happening. So I didn't see the Four Horsemen that was happening. I would say I would have liked that towards the latter days of WCW when it was starting to fall apart and they tried to dust the Horsemen off one time. So, okay, so when they came with the last iteration, because I saw some bad versions of the Horsemen, right? Like yeah. The Mongo McMichael ones and this and that. When they came with that last version, when it was Malenko and Benoit and then Flair and Arn Anderson, like, I got behind that. I thought that was really good because, you know, I was into the guys that were the better workers and that worked. I think, I just wish that at that later stages of WCW, they would have tried to give the Horsemen a legitimate push just to see what it could have done for them because, you know, they were running stale on NWO and, like, I think the time was right that you let the Four Horsemen get one last run, and even if it's four guys outnumbered by like six or seven guys, like let them get over a few times and let's see what happens.
Let them do the old school way. Put them in a cage, you know, yeah. And no interference.
War games, whatever, yeah. Right? So that I think that they deserved. So yeah, and you know, it's hard for me to say. I can't say like I ever would have really like been a big fan of Ole Anderson. I like Tully. I like Tully, but I didn't like him when they were the Brainbusters.
Oh, that was the guy that you hated, yeah.
And then...
you hated Tully Blanchard, yeah. Dude. I remember... That's kind of like, what's a smart
and,
guy?
And Arn. I didn't really care for Arn either. And then Barry Windham. Like, if I would... I didn't really get to see, like, the Barry Windham time either. But, like, I know Barry was a good worker. I just never saw him really, like, with the Horsemen. But I'm pretty sure I would have... Like, that four would have been a group that I really could have got behind.
All right, so... With the anniversary of Eddie's death, I listened to the Jericho podcast, and it was...
him and Conan?
No, it was Malenko and Chavo. And okay. To tell you the truth, like, Jericho's podcast, I think right now, is probably my favorite podcast to listen to, because he actually, like, talks to wrestlers, and he doesn't spend too much time, like, you know, Austin will talk about 20 minutes about some shit I don't care about on his fucking ranch, right? But, you know, that was a really good podcast with Chavo and Dean, and then... I listened to Sasha Banks one today, and she was saying that Eddie Guerrero was her favorite wrestler, you know, growing up. And one thing that's been said, especially by Jericho, who I think has a good handle on the business, but and even Conan was saying too, is that they're saying that Eddie was probably the best wrestler, was probably the best, not wrestler, but the worker of all time, or like just like the best in-ring performer ever. And what they're kind of saying is, first of all, let me ask you, is he the best in-ring performer you've ever seen? And disagree or agree and tell me why.
I'm trying not to look at the ceiling here. Off the top of my head, I'm going to say no. And the first name that comes to mind is Bret Hart. To go with my typical cop-out answer, if you're going to...
No, I don't want to hear that. Why would you say Bret Hart is better? Why would you say Bret Hart over Eddie Guerrero?
Probably because I've never really thought about, like, is Eddie Guerrero the best in-ring worker? I mean, I think he's right there. I think Chris Benoit's right up there, too. I would say Chris Benoit was a better in-ring worker than Eddie Guerrero. I think Eddie maybe was...
Not worker, maybe in-ring performer. How about that?
I'll just say maybe Eddie was the most well-rounded of all time. Cause I think, you know, with all the things that Benoit could do, like the one thing, even though he did have like the top rope headbutt, you never really saw him high fly. Whereas like Eddie could work technically. Eddie could be as dirty as he wanted to be. Eddie could be a legitimate high flyer and luchador style if he had to. So maybe if you want to go, like, the most versatile in-ring performer, because, like, Bret couldn't do any kind of anything near, like, the athleticism that Eddie had. Like, I kind of, for me personally, like, my taste generally, like, is going to kind of slide over to, like, mat wrestling and technical wrestling ability. And I think that's why, like, my instinct is to go, like, Bret Hart or Benoit. But if I'm going to say, like, on the overall of all the different like types of like wrestling skill that one can have, I think it's a pretty good argument because Eddie had that first high flying lucha style, which I generally don't like, but I'm fine with it with Eddie because I know he could back it up with Matt Bass and being a technician and a dirty heel when he needed to be, and could cut a hell of a promo.
So that's what it is right there. So this is reason why like Jericho and Conan are saying like he was probably the best in-ring performer. And it's funny you bring up these two guys, right? And Benoit. So the thing with Benoit was that whether Benoit was a face or a heel, like if he was a heel, everybody still respected him because they know he could get the job done. I think Bret Hart. So basically, with Jericho, I'll tell you Jericho's argument and Conan with it, why they're saying that it is. But I think you're getting close with Bret Hart because, and maybe after I'm done saying, you can understand why they're saying Eddie Guerrero. When Bret Hart was a face, everybody loved him as a face, right? Like, you know, I didn't. You know, and you want to talk about guys I could not stand. It was Bret Hart during his prime, during his babyface run. But people got behind him. They loved him as a babyface. When he became a heel, they loved him as, you know, they hated him. They hated him as a heel. Like
in a good way.
In a good way. But see, but the thing with Eddie Guerrero, so even like, so you talk about like Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Benoit, right? Like a Chris Benoit match, right? Going into that match, I know Chris Benoit's going to win. I know Benoit's a better worker. I know he's a better wrestler. He deserves to win. But what they said about Eddie Guerrero is that Eddie, not only was he just as good as like any of those guys that we just mentioned in terms of Benoit, if he's not better than Benoit. And I think he probably is better than Benoit because he could adapt a lot better than Benoit could. But what they said was that when Eddie was a heel, everybody hated him. Everybody hated Eddie Guerrero as a heel. He had the people in the palm of his hands as a heel. When he became a babyface, everybody loved him as a babyface. No questions whatsoever. So whatever role he played, he had the crowd eating out of his hand. And that's why they said he's the best in-ring performer, because you loved him as a face and you hated him as a heel. Now, the smarks in us loved him no matter what. And we appreciated what he did as a heel. But there was a time when he was in WCW facing Benoit and he was a heel, I could not stand him. Like I thought he was not in the same league as Chris Benoit. He was not in the same league as Chris Jericho. He wasn't even in the same league as Dean Malenko. But the guy could put on a good match. Like some of my favorite matches were Malenko and Benoit versus Jericho and Eddie Guerrero. I thought Eddie Guerrero sucked. I could not stand the guy. Right? I just got tired of his act. I didn't like his stupid little frog splash. And there was no way.
You didn't like the frog splash.
During that time, but this is where I'm saying that, because Benoit was jobbing so much to everybody, right? He was jobbing to everybody left and right, and I felt that Benoit could be like the U.S. champion, could be a world champion. I wanted to see him take that next step, and instead they put him in matches with Eddie Guerrero, who I didn't think could hold a candle to Benoit. This is when I first started watching. You know, when I was watching WCW, and I was like a full-on rabid Wolverine fan of Chris Benoit. And then the match that I saw was Benoit and Malenko versus Jericho and Guerrero. And Malenko and Benoit put both of them in the submission finishers, right? And both those guys tapped out like within like a second. They didn't like hold on to the hold. They just like tapped out real fast. I was like, okay, now I like these guys because I know what they're doing. They're playing that heel role. And they did such a good job that while I'm watching the match, I want to watch them lose because I hate them so much. And that's when I turned. That's when I started liking them. So that's kind of why I feel that, you know, I don't want to say it, but I think, you know, Eddie Guerrero, I think he's up there. I mean, I don't know if he's the best in-ring performer of all time. I think Macho Man is the same way. I mean, when Macho Man was a heel, you hated him. And when he was a face, you loved him.
I mean, it's just like, when you say, like, is this the number one guy of all time, right? I mean, dude. I mean, like, it should be a tiered conversation, right? Is Eddie Guerrero in the top tier of all-time in-ring performers? That's an easy yes. Whether I could say, is he the very best number one? I think, you know, you can make that argument. I'm kind of, like, arguing my way into it a little bit here. But he's right there. I always liked Eddie Guerrero. Like, when I never, and it's partly because, like, you know, I like Benoit, but I wasn't all invested like you. I was liking Jericho, but I wasn't the Jericho mark then that I became eventually. It was just another guy that I thought was a great worker who had matches I liked to watch. And, you know, even, you know, I didn't have a problem with Mysterio at that time. Like, you know, later on I had a big problem with Rey Mysterio, yeah. Right?
Well, Mysterio was from WCW. He was fun to watch.
But it was because he was fighting against those guys who were all within his size range that I was believable that he could pull some of the stuff off. But for me, Guerrero was always like the one luchador I saw that was legitimate throughout any like weight differential that he was wrestling against guys.
He was a lot smaller back
could,
then too.
Right, and he could go lucha style, but he didn't rely on lucha style. He could go mat wrestling. He could go power, and it was just like, even though he was really small, he was so good technically that he could still like suplex anybody or get all the moves that he needed to get off. And I guess you must have been pretty bitter and jaded Benoit fan to not have any love for the frog splash, because that move was sick like all the time. That was, I think, the first time when I saw him do the frog splash. I'm like, this guy's badass right here. So I didn't.
I think it was the wrestling game, you know, because I thought that the animation for that frog splash in a WCW World Tour was pretty weak, mm-hmm. and so I think that's what kind of hindered me on it.
But his actual frog splash was good, and I think within a year or two they fixed it to get that extra like kind of body contortion that he added that made that move.
Oh, yeah, and once that then I started liking the frog splash.
So once they get the video game right, then you like
that, that's when I started liking it. And I'll end off with this. Chris Benoit in WCW versus NWO, the Chris Benoit character was one of the best video game wrestlers of all time. I mean, just hands down, the best, to this day, is one of the best movesets ever in that game. So, and I'll just leave it at that. And I know you want to get into your video game review, but we'll have to wait for another time, because we're getting too late into it.
That's fine.
All right. So move skill number 129. I might split this up into two, since we're going long. We had the first part. We're talking about the aftermath of Survivor Series, and then we started talking about a little memory lane. So move skill number 129. I got my boy Bed Hammond Dunce over here, and I am Bad News Ramen, and we'll check you out next week.
Cool. It's like that, y'all. It's like that, y'all. It's like that, y'all.
Check that prognosis, is it real or showbiz? My window faces, shootouts, drug overdoses. Live amongst the roses, only the drama. For real, a nickel plate is my fate. My medicine is the ganja, here's my basis. My razor embraces many faces. Your telephone blows.